Dent, I'm sorry I haven't a clue. The antidote to panel gates. At the piano is Colin Sell, and your chairman is Humphrey Littleton.
Hello and welcome to I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. You join us this week amid the splendour of the Grand Opera House in historic York. The first known settlement here was during the Bronze Age and was called Brigantia, or literally home of the Briganti tribe. But when Quintus Petilius and his 9th legion arrived in AD 71, it became known as Iberacum, or literally, not anymore it isn't. Very soon the town was overrun by the invading Anglo-Saxons and reverted to Celtic rule after King Arthur's famous victory. This was short-lived, however, as Arthur fled south when a messenger arrived from Camelot with the urgent news that it was another bonus rollover jackpot week. By the 8th century, York was capital of Northumbria, but during a succession of wars against the Vikings under Ivar the Boneless, the city fell several times. Although not nearly as often as Ivar. The Vikings were finally defeated in 1066 at Stamford Bridge, going down to Chelsea 5-4, after a thrilling penalty shootout. And with the subsequent arrival of the Normans, this pattern of history established the old centre of York much as we see it today, repeatedly overrun by foreigners. However, the story of the people of York having unwelcome visitors forced upon them doesn't end there. Let's meet the teams. On my left, alongside Graham Garden, is Sandy Toxby. And on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Tim Brooke-Taylor. And eager as ever to score on the desk next to me, the very delightful Samantha. Okay, teams, now you'll all be aware of the appalling trend of dumbing down that has recently blighted so much radio and television broadcasting. Even the BBC has accepted something has to be done, and this was covered in a keynote speech by the new Director General, Mr. Keith Chegwin. There'll be lots of new faces on many new committees, and our own Samantha has been invited to sit on several of them. Teams, I'd like you now to reverse the process with a round called Dumbing Up. In this one, I'd like your suggestions, please, of radio and TV shows that might be made more upmarket, sophisticated, or intellectually challenging. Jeremy, will you start, please?
The bell becomes l'addition, s'il vous plaît.
Graham?
Jim Davidson's generation game becomes Charles Darwin's generation game.
Tim?
Postmodernist Pat and his black and white abstract cat.
Sandy?
Grange Hill becomes Gordonston Heights.
Only Fools and Horses becomes three-day eventing.
Overdue repeats of the goodies.
Now known as the betters.
Casualty becomes, I'm sorry, this is a private hospital. We can't handle emergencies.
Play school with Brian and Emmanuel Kent.
Pets win Pulitzer Prizes.
Home and away at our other home.
They think it's the Louvre.
Animal hospital becomes animal feng shui consultancy.
ER becomes IQ.
Okay, let's move on to a musical round now. It's called One Song to the Tune of Another. Piano accompaniment will be provided by Colin Sell. Going to start with you, Tim. I'd like you to start by singing the words of Nobody Loves a Fairy When She's 40 to the tune of Danny Boy.
Did you mention the word accompaniment?
Yes. Interesting thing about Corin Cell.
I'm ready now, Hump.
Thanks, because I couldn't remember it.
But that is not enough. They like their bit of magic from a younger bit of star. When you have lost your little fairy dimples, and the moth holes in your dress let in the cold, you stand there shouting, what's so? But they all pass by your grotto. No one loves a fairy when she...
And Jeremy, now, would you please sing the words of I taught I taught a pudic tat to the tune of Jupiter from Holt and...
Everyone's been very kind.
Sandy, now, would you please sing the words of My Old Man's a Dustman to the tune of Somewhere Over the Rainbow? I thought that was rather moving. Not far enough, but moving. Finally, Graham, would you please sing the words of Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious to the tune of Beethoven's Ode to Joy?
If you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Okay, on to the next round now. People ask me every day, why aren't there more DIY and gardening programs on TV? To which I say, the question you should be asking is, why have vets and sick animals been overlooked for so long? Well, in fact, there are one or two programs devoted to the subject, but the BBC puts them on when no one's watching. Every night between 7:30 and 9. One of the best is called Vets in Practice, which I've had adapted for the teams in a new version entitled Vets in Theory. Each team will take turns to present their sick pets for examination, while the opposing side should attempt to identify the animal and provide a diagnosis. Okay, Graham and Sandy will start by bringing their pet into the examination room. The animal's identity and illness will be relayed to our audience via the laser display board. And for listeners at home, here's the mystery voice.
Our dog has got no nose. Our dog has got no nose.
Right, you're the vets, Tim and Jeremy. Off you go.
Come on, bring the creature in.
Yeah, well.
Oh, Dr. Fledgling, I'm so worried.
What seems to be the trouble?
It's Dobbin. He's not quite himself.
Well, just pop this thermometer up. It might hurt him a little bit, because it's the one from the side of the church, so it might...
It's not quite in yet.
That's all very well, but would you mind doing it to Dobbin? The thing is that Dobbin's supposed to guard us, but he makes a real mess of it, doesn't he? The right dinner.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
A complete dinner of it, he makes.
Yes, makes a dinner of it, he does, yes.
Right.
Or even a breakfast.
And, well, in Yorkshire, they say the snout's wrong with him.
Yeah. Well, we do find this a lot in porpoises.
Do we think Dobbin thinks he's a dog, or...?
Oh, he's a dog, all right. He's all dog.
He's just not quite...
Not quite all dog.
No.
You mean he's not the dog's...
That's fine.
He's been taking that apart.
Yeah.
He was turned down for a job as a sniffer dog.
Yeah.
At Heathrow.
And nobody knows
your
why.
Your dog got no nose, baby. Oh.
I wondered what that smell was.
Right, your turn, Tim and Jeremy. Your identity and illness of your pet is now being exhibited on the laser display board, and here again is the mystery voice for listeners at home.
Our sheep thinks it's a Yorkshireman. Our sheep thinks it's a Yorkshireman.
Okay, Graham and Sandy, you're the vets this time. Off you go.
Come in, sit yourselves down. Thank you for the trouble.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Come on.
Man, flip.
She's just so grumpy, isn't she? She's really irritable.
Oh, I don't think so. Not really.
No. I think she means well. She's got a heart of gold, but, you know...
Slightly misguided self-confidence, possibly.
Mm.
Stop, southern bastard! Be back,
now, come on, speak up, because I think you're being a little sheepish about this.
What seems to be the problem with your sheep?
She just seems to have all this... confidence that isn't really based on anything.
She wouldn't be anything to do with Yorkshire, by any chance.
Ilkley Moor, back.
She's also had a lot of trouble with her waterworks as well.
Back in some...
So your sheep is from Yorkshire?
That's not quite the right answer,
Tim,
but it'll do.
You say?
Any answer will do. Right, it's time now for the old favourite Cheddar Gorge, a game that has a fascinating history. It became first popular under Hanoverian rule as Cheddar George, being the pet name given to George III by Charlotte de Mecklenburg when she found she'd married a king who was convinced he was a small portion of cheese. And so began a fine tradition of British royal dottiness. Queen Victoria was a succulent purple plum, Louis of Battenberg a moist pink and yellow marzipan sponge cake, while our last King Edward was a small, lumpy, brown Nazi sympathizer. In the modern version of the game, each player utters one word each on a subject of my choosing, the object being never to finish a sentence. If you hear this, it means I judge that a full stop has been reached. But if you hear this, it means the continuity announcer isn't feeling very well. Okay, teams, the subject of your sentence is an address to the World Wildlife Fund by Prince Philip. Tim, will you start, please?
The
World
Wildlife Fund
is bang!
Ha ha ha! I
bagged a
pair of
large waiters
who happened
to cross
my
path when
I
was ruminating
on my
toilet
seat, which is
made
of wooden recyclable
and
yet somehow cruel
material,
which never crossed
my
path before tonight.
Or ever
will in
future be
my
can't finish a sentence on bye.
I just got fed up with it. The next round is called Gardener's Question Time. So you're welcome to join us today in the potting shed where our team comprising Tim Brooke-Taylor of Buxton, Graham Garden of England, and Jeremy Hardy, of course, are on a light sandy toxvig and ready to take phone in gardener's questions. Could we have our first caller, please?
Hello, it's Pippa Greenwood here. I've got a garden with a heavy, chalky soil on a steep slope, and my question for the panel is, I've heard professional comedians claim that there are only 11 jokes in the world. What are they?
I've heard that professional comedians claim there are only 11 jokes in the world. What are they? They are the England cricket team. Thank you for asking, Pippa.
Well, it says here the right answer is farce, slapstick, wordplay, exaggeration, comic metaphor, inappropriate response, repetition, irony, mimicry, satire, and black humor. Doesn't mention filth. Okay. Okay, can we have the next caller, please?
Hello, my name's Alan Titchmarsh, and I have a north-facing garden with a chalky soil. Can the panel please explain why women live longer than men?
Jeremy, will you answer that one?
Well, women live longer than men so that a man dies hearing the words, "What do you mean you won't have time?"
Well, I don't know why women live longer than men, but I can tell you why they've got better eyesight.
Sorry, Sandy, it just helps me relax.
Hello, but not during the show, Jeremy.
The answer here is because men are less resistant to disease, drink more, fight more, and don't care what they eat. Next caller.
Hello, my name's Gay Search, and I have a southeast-facing garden with a free-draining soil. And my question to the panel is this. What is the longest English word with no recurring letters?
Graham, how about that one?
What is the longest English word with no recurring letters? No, it isn't. I think it's Vorderman. And by the way, that's 9 letters.
I questioned this answer, but it says it here, so I've got to tell you that the word is uncopyrightable, which isn't an English word at all. It's some filthy concoction, probably from across the Atlantic. Okay, next call, please.
Hello, my name is Bob Flardew. I'm an organic gardener from Norfolk. I have a windy north-facing garden with a light soil. My question for the panel is this. Can the panel please advise me as to why dusters are yellow?
Sandy, help him out, please.
Dusters are yellow because they're afraid of spiders.
Opinions differ. Some say they're yellow to match the bright yellow sunshine and daffodils of spring. And some say they were originally imported from China in the 18th century as yellow cloth. Oh, next caller, please. What's your name?
Hello, my name is Monty Don, and I've been gardening here in the west of England for about 10 years on very heavy clay loam. And my question for the panel is this. Where did the term coffee baggers come from?
Sorry we got you up. I think the term coffee baggers come from German Muslims who get up before breakfast and grab the mats at the front of the mosque.
The answer is the American Civil War, when profiteers kept their belongings in bags made from carpets. Okay, who's our next caller?
So, hello, it's Pippa Greenwich here again. I've been gardening for 35 years now. Does the panel know how creative our forebears were in celebrating the first millennium? Did they do anything special for it?
Actually, what happened to the first millennium was the Rolling Stones held a farewell concert.
You remember, Hump?
No, is he the fellow that used to blow the trumpet? Is that...
I'll tell you the answer is no. Time now for Swanee Kazoo, when we combine those most unlikely musical bedfellows, the lilting Swanee whistle and the rasping kazoo. History is littered with examples of diverse items being put together to make something new and surprising. If Michelangelo hadn't put egg white and crushed beetles together, he'd never have had paint for the Sistine Chapel. If it hadn't been for the Chinese putting saltpeter and sulfur together, we'd never have got to enjoy Chow Mein's snack pot. And it took Logie Baird's life's work in combining electromagnetic radio wave frequencies with the high electron vacuum cathode ray tube to pave the way for Pets Win prizes. Accompaniment here will be provided by Colin Sell at the piano. Incidentally, we were all surprised to hear that Colin has recently been standing in for Oasis. He spent 4 days holding up a dried arrangement at the Chelsea Flower Show. Okay, Sandy and Graham, your song is True Love, and it's to feature Graham Garden on Swanee Whistle and Sandy Toksvig on Kazoo. Duet is Chirpy Chirpy Cheep Cheep and is to feature Jeremy Hardy on kazoo and Tim Brooke Taylor on Swanee Whistle. Well, it's very nearly the end of the show. But there's just time to squeeze in a round of Builder's Songbook. Samantha tells me she has to nip home and she's got a man coming in to start work on her new patio. He's bringing round his cement mixer and he's promised to layer roughly across the foundations. So while she's away, teamed, I'd like your suggestions, please, of song titles or lyrics that might appeal to an audience drawn from the building trade. Sandy, can you start this one?
Karma, come on, who's done this then?
A hard rain's going to fall, but we'll put a bit of tarpaulin over it. Should be all right in a couple of days.
I've got you under my skip.
Tomorrow, I'll be there tomorrow.
It's my bottom and I'll show it if I want to.
Whip, crack away, or just leave it hanging out of your trousers.
I left my hod in San Francisco.
Concrete and clay, or sand and cement, the remix.
Return to render.
Making good is hard to do.
The first quote is the cheapest.
What's another year?
Tea for two. Well, all of us, actually. Could you make it very strong?
Nobody knows the trowels I've seen.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, as the full moon of time is glimpsed in the rugby coach window of destiny, I notice it's the end of the show. So from the team, Samantha and myself, and the good folk of York, it's goodbye.
Graham Garden, Jeremy Hardy, Sandy Coxwig and Tim Brooke Taylor will be given silly things to do by Humphrey Littleton, with Colin Fell setting some of them to music. The programme consultant was Ian Patterson, and the producer was John Naismith.